Welcome to The Drill Down, the business stories behind stocks on the move. I'm Corey Johnson, and today is June 22nd. Well, just ahead, Planet Fitness reopens its doors, but what would happen if all of its members returned? Speaking of fitness, McDonald's has started a club for its best customers. Picture that. And why Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Uber are all using Teletech for customer service. We'll drill down to the company with Valeri portfolio manager Lamar Valeri, but first, it's sponsor time.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era, a one-stop equity platform where you can seamlessly connect to any earnings call and surface actionable insights automatically. Era's AI-powered tools will allow you to work faster and smarter. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And you can listen to The Drill Down on any of your favorite podcast platforms, including iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, Pandora. But listen to us every day and make that easy on yourself. Subscribe, follow, and catch every show.
And let us know what companies you think we should be drilling down on. Talk to us on Twitter and Instagram by following at DrillDownPod. And connect with us directly at our website, bizpod.net.
I'm Corey Johnson, and welcome to The Drill Down, where we explain the business stories behind stocks on the move. Joining me, as always, executive producer Isaac Webster. Isaac, some of the three most important developments in the world of business today.
Hey, Corey. Number one, U.S. home prices in May posting their biggest annual increase in more than two decades. That's thanks to a shortage of properties and low borrowing rates. The median existing home sales price in May topped $350,000 for the very first time. That figure was nearly 24% higher than a year ago, the biggest year-over-year price increase since recorded data going back to 1999, all of this according to the National Association of Realtors.
Let's look at that again. Inflation. You want to look for inflation? A 24% increase in the most expensive things that people buy in their entire lives? You can lower the borrowing costs all you want, but it's got to go a long way to make up for a 24% increase in price. That is inflation.
All right, Corey, the next story we're watching. Blackstone has agreed to buy a company that buys and rents single-family homes. The investment firm will acquire Home Partners of America in a $6 billion deal. Home Partners owns more than 17,000 houses across the U.S., and it buys homes, rents them out, and offers its tenants the chance to eventually buy.
It's an interesting model, but it's interesting also that some big money managers think that there's still opportunity despite that 24% increase in housing prices that you were just describing, Isaac.
Yeah, well, Blackstone has a tradition of finding these home market opportunities. And finally, the third most important business story of the day, the Federal Trade Commission will review Amazon's proposed acquisition of Hollywood studio MGM. Now, this is according to the Wall Street Journal. The FTC, of course, just got a new chairwoman who has been critical of Amazon's expansion. Now, all sizable mergers have to submit to an antitrust review from the government. The FTC shares antitrust authority with the Justice Department. Now, the journal says the FTC pushed for jurisdiction over the Amazon-MGM merger review because it already has an open, wide-ranging antitrust investigation into Amazon's business practices.
So maybe they'll see the patterns or they'll know where to look.
Now, Corey, what stocks are you drilling down on today?
Well, let's take a look at Planet Fitness.
Planet Fitness, PLNT. Shares rose 1% today, but Planet Fitness shares have gained 20% in a year. What's new with Planet Fitness?
All right, well, let's think about what you just said. The stock's up 20% in the last year. Are things really that much better? Only that much better? Only that much worse? This stock is virtually as high as it was pre-pandemic. So, you know, the last time I looked at this story is over a year ago. Remember a New York Post story where some customers had been charged membership fees while the gyms were closed because of Corona. The company said it would give credit back when the gyms reopened. Well, now they're mostly reopened. And the stock is right back to where it was before the pandemic. So here's the question. Is Peloton a permanent thing, right? Or is Planet Fitness? Because in a world where people have learned how to work out without going to the gym, are they going to fit in an extra workout and go to Planet Fitness like they used to before the pandemic? Like what's the trade-off between home workout and the survival of home workout and the old way of working out, right? So look at the model. So that doesn't make sense if you think Planet Fitness actually sells memberships to its gyms, which it sort of does. But one could argue they're in the business of selling memberships. They don't really want everyone who buys a membership to come to the gym. At least I think so. Why do I think that? Well, guess how many, Isaac, guess how, I went through their filings in the last few quarters, the last couple of years even. Guess how many members they have per gym right now? Well, let me give you a clue.
All together, Planet Fitness?
So the typical Planet Fitness I've read can hold about 700 people.
Oh, wow. Every single Planet Fitness?
No, that's typical. How many? So if a typical store can hold 700 people or gym can hold 700 people, how many people do you think they would sell memberships to per gym?
Ah, gotcha. I would say probably 2,000.
In the last quarter, it was 6,570 members per physical gym.
Wow.
So
I wouldn't want to be there if they all show up on the same day.
As any gym rat that'll tell you, the best thing that can happen in the gym is to have not a lot of people show up. So there's more room to get the equipment that you want. Well, the company says, and they presented at a conference today, and they've been presenting at a few financial conferences in the last few weeks, that they're only at 80% of their gym usage from a year from before the pandemic. Yet, as I mentioned, the stock's right about where it was before. And that it's not a whole new group of people they're bringing into this world. These are rejoining members. In other words, people more likely to actually use those gyms. So it makes you wonder about their growth prospects and who they're going to grow to. Here is their CFO, Tom Fitzgerald, speaking at a financial conference back in June.
Some other interesting trends we saw through April was that about 30% of our joins were rejoins. So they were a member of Planet Fitness in the past and they're coming back. That typically runs 20 to 22%. So they're coming back faster than we've seen in the past. And about 4 to 5% of our joins are coming to us from closed competition. The industry reports that about 17% of the stores in the industry are permanently closed. Thankfully for Planet, based on the unit economics of our model, we've had zero store closings, permanent closures from COVID, so that's great. And we've got nearly 100% of our stores open now. The only ones left to open. We've got a number of stores in Canada that have reclosed again. Hopefully we'll reopen shortly here, but everything in the U.S. is now currently open.
So everything's open. Only 80% of their customers have come back. And the stock's right back to as if nothing had happened at all. We'll see how that works out for them. But it is shocking this how this model works, where they sell more memberships than they can fit in, it would seem to me, certainly all at the same time, into any building.
I got to point out, I mean, in my opinion, in all due respect, I don't think Planet Fitness members are the same type of gym rats who are going to buy a Peloton or a Tonal. I don't think Planet Fitness and Peloton are competing for the same types of members.
Fair point. They advertise both to customers and to investors that they are a low price entrant into this business. They want to make it as friction free to get a membership at the gym. I'm reminded of the New Yorker cartoon where the guy stands at the front desk and says, "Well, how much is it for a membership for that I buy and that don't ever use?"
Now, Corey, what is your next drill down?
Hey, let's take a look at McDonald's.
McDonald's, MCD, shares have gained 24% in a year. What's new with McDonald's?
Well, much anticipated. You've been waiting for this moment. You can finally join a loyalty program for McDonald's. It's coming next month, a nationwide rollout on July 8th, the company said in a statement. There's a McDonald's digital app, but they're going to have a loyalty program. For McDonald's, it means they're going to know a lot more about who their customers are, and they really are looking at rival Starbucks as kind of the example here. I heard a story so many years ago, it may have been apocryphal, about a fast food chain whose food was maybe not that good for its customers, but some of its customers represented a significantly larger portion of their sales than other customers. So they created an express lane for those people. But they pulled the program because they found that the people in the express lane did not have the did not create an aspirational image of what the rest of the customers might someday want to join. Nonetheless, we're getting a McDonald's loyalty program, and maybe it's for those healthy salads and the coffees and all the great things they sell there, or maybe it's for everything else. But this company really does, it really does, Isaac, jibe with the trends we hear from so many companies. We're talking about what they learned from COVID, what the digital experience was like, what it was like to offer two offerings, one digital, one physical, and maybe how they might merge the two. Here is the McDonald's CEO, Chris Kempczinski, in their last earnings conference call.
It all has to feel like it's part of the same experience. And we've got, I'd say, the foundation on top of it, but or foundation laid, but I think there's a lot we need to put on top of it to still make it even more convenient, even more seamless, and to ensure there's the fun that carries through. You know, why can't the same fun that maybe you're having in the app come to when you show up in the restaurant? And I think a part of this is also being able to recognize the customer when they come to the restaurant. And so for us, loyalty and getting that deployed is a key enabler to ensure that today, 95% of the customers that come to the restaurant, we have no idea who they are. Imagine if in the future, we could know, let's say 50% of them. It creates an entirely different brand experience. So that's what we're focused on going forward, and do see the two working together.
So there you have it, the digital experience and the physical experience coming together with the app that they've had, but a loyalty program that is brand new, and McDonald's will know more about who that customer is when they walk in the door and what they want. And I'll bet you, Isaac, it's probably not another salad.
I think that's a safe bet to make. Now, Corey, what's your next drill down?
Speaking of apps, speaking of good food, let's talk about DoorDash. DoorDash announced a deal. Yeah, let's talk about it.
DASH, they gained 3% today, but what a rocket ship it's been for the past 4 days, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you look at what's happened since Friday, so they just announced a deal with Albertsons. And in the last couple of days, the stock has gone straight up since announcing that deal. Albertsons, of course, owns Albertsons stores, as well as Safeway, Vons, Jewel in the Midwest. This will all let them have nearly 2,000 stores where they can essentially do some kind of grocery or on-demand grocery from those stores. And it caused the stock to go straight up. You've seen a $2.2 billion increase in the market value of DoorDash. $2.2 billion increase in the value of DoorDash since last Friday. But Albertsons'
That's amazing.
Profits,
now, Albertsons isn't everywhere, though. Albertsons is it more regional?
No, it's all over the country. So it's Safeway, it's Vons, it's Albertsons, it's Jewel, it's everywhere. But they've got, more importantly, DoorDash increase in value is $2.2 billion. Albertsons' total profits last year, only $850 million. So how could DoorDash be worth $2.2 billion more dollars for signing a deal that would, I mean, if they were to capture all of Albertsons' profits, all of it, and double it, and add 54% of that, even that wouldn't equal $2.2 billion.
So yeah, seems
this
improbable.
This is some exuberance based on potential of what this could be? Is it based on the notion that somehow delivery services will be even more in demand after the pandemic than they were before the pandemic? I mean, for me, I can't imagine a better year for Uber Eats or DoorDash or their competitors ever than what they just went through. But we'll listen to what DoorDash's chief financial officer, Prabir Andhakar, had to say at their last earnings conference call about the market of delivery.
You know, some of the markets you mentioned, whether it's convenience or grocery, these are extremely large markets. Convenience is $200 to $250 billion, groceries an $800 billion to $1 trillion market. But the thing that's unique is both of these have very low penetration rates. And you think about our platform and the success that we've enjoyed in convenience up to this point, despite, you know, frankly, launching that business 12 months ago, it's because of the extensibility of our platform. It's because we take a hybrid approach that pairs together not just third-party partners in our marketplace like CVS, like Walgreens, like 7-Eleven, in fact, Rite Aid that we recently announced, but also we're bringing our own first-party selection to consumers, and that's in order to provide consumers a choice and serve them in underserved neighborhoods. And so penetration is extremely low today, and there's a lot of runway for growth.
So that's the view from above, right? What if they could somehow capture all of the groceries just think of the market, right? So if all of the groceries delivered or that are sold in the whole world are $250 billion, yeah, that is a big market. But in a business that usually has about a 2% profit margin, $250 billion in sales is only going to give you about $5 billion in profits. So if they were to capture all of the profits from the grocery business and get to half of all of the groceries that are sold, that'd be about $2.5 billion in annual profits to DoorDash, or annual revenues to DoorDash, and yet a $2.2 billion increase in the value of the company this week based on this press release. So the stock is, the people who are buying the stock, if they're buying it because of Albertsons, are very, very excited about a business that ultimately doesn't really have a lot of profits left to be squeezed out of it. In any case, interesting one to watch. Joining us next to take a look at another super interesting business that's somehow related, in fact, looking at customer service for delivery companies and a whole lot more. We'll talk about that with our guest, Valeri Portfolio Manager Lamar Valeri, right after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. Era's event access and monitoring intelligence platform improves earnings season and the investor events in between through comprehensive calendar tracking, one-click event access, dynamic monitors, multicasting, and more. Powered by an advanced language processing engine, which consumes some 40,000 investor events annually across 10,000 global equities. Learn more at Era, AIERA.com. And remember to join the Drill Down on Twitter and Instagram at DrillDownPod. And check out our website, bizpod.net. Let us know what stocks we should be drilling down on.
All right, welcome back to the Drill Down. Joining me right now is one of our favorite guests, Lamar Valeri, joins us right now from New Orleans. It's nice and cool this time of year.
Cool and dry.
Maybe not. Yeah, right, exactly. You brought an interesting company for us to drill down here, TTEC Holdings, which is an interesting company because they're very much involved in kind of what the phrase we keep hearing lately is digital transformation and helping companies, I think, become more digital, more social, and helping brands in particular. How would you describe their business?
Sure. So the way that Teletech describes it is they are customer experience as a service. So their legacy business is, you know, effectively outsourced call centers, customer relations for different companies. The smaller, more high growth piece is on the digital side, and really, I think what they focus on is being able to provide both in a thoughtful way to businesses. So whether it's, you know, legacy car manufacturers handling warranty claims and dealing with customer service, or, you know, these sort of explosive growth, you know, Peloton type companies that kind of come out of nowhere and have no way to scale up their customer experiences or their customer service platform. It's a lot easier for groups like that to just outsource.
And you refer to it as Teletech. They do, in fact, call themselves TTEC. I think maybe trying to put that whole notion of the telephone behind them. I heard from a friend recently who told me that the thing that we do when we hold a thumb up to our ear and our index finger by our mouth, the kids have no idea what that means now. They just hold a flat palm because that's the only possible thing you do, you know, to try to talk.
Yeah, and my kids don't talk on the phone anyway, so it's a totally different sign of just punching your palm or something. I don't really know.
And you would think it would be a bad sign for a company in that business of dealing with customer phone calls if there aren't any customers making phone calls anymore.
Sure. Well, obviously, there's a lot of people. Your kids, while I'm sure are wonderful consumers, they don't have the real money. So the real money's in the
they're big consumers. That's for sure.
Yeah. So the old people like us tend to use the phones. But what Teletech also does is they've got the chat bots and the ways that the next generation text bots, the way the younger generation likes to interact. So they're helping companies figure out how to extend their platform to where the customers are and where the customers are going to be. So, you know, it's if a company's really good at making a widget, that's great. But putting in a text bot on their website or a way for, you know, the consumers to text them and get instant answers to their questions is a little more complicated and not really their core competency. So that's the kind of area where these guys really shine.
Now, these guys based in Colorado, not, you know, the heart of Silicon Valley, but sometimes where you see some real innovation along those lines. When you see this company growing, Are there certain lessons that they have from their old legacy business where that really translate well, that gives them a leg up in the digital business? It's solving the same customer problem, right? Customers want to know what the hell is going on with something, and the company wanted to relay that in a certain way, but in a very, very different medium.
Yeah, and again, it's they're trying to figure out where the customers are struggling or need help, and where to best meet them. So, you know, sometimes it's more Silicon Valley tech, but a lot of the times, frankly, it's people just calling the 1-800 number and trying to figure out how to get this thing to work, or how to assemble a product or whatever it is. So, a lot of this stuff is trying to be the hottest technology. Isn't necessarily where the customer is. The chatbots are great, but you know, as I'm sure you've seen and I've seen, they can be frustrating when you're really trying to get in depth and you need to get on the phone with somebody who understands the product.
Oh my God, let's talk Comcast. Forget about it.
Yeah.
My modem isn't working. You'd like to buy HBO Max. No, my right. Modem isn't working. You like more HBO Max. But to that point, is their expertise really understanding the depth of knowledge they need to get with each customer so that they can answer those questions?
That's part of it. But again, part of it is old school. I mean, these guys have 58,000 employees, and a lot of the core competency is, and by the way, call center, the folks in the call center last typically less than 1 year on the job. It's 130% turnover. So it's a massive undertaking to staff these, to get these folks educated, to get them hired, to get them in place. Teletech also did a nice job over the last year of getting these guys working from home. So 80% of their employees now work from home, which, you know, a lot of companies that had their own call centers really struggled in how to deal with pandemic lockdown and really weren't used to handling this kind of situation. So
that's an enormous employee base.
It is an enormous employee base, and like I said, it turns over constantly. So a big part of their business is just recruiting and HR handling this type of workforce. And what they're finding right now is that they're having an easier time in hiring. So, you know, you hear about bars, restaurants, airlines really struggling to bring people in, get people on board. It's a lot easier when it doesn't involve a commute. Or coming into an office, so they're having more success in staffing, and so they're helping solve a pain point there.
Now, talk to me about the corporate evolution of this company. We can go either their sort of their long term growth or their most recent acquisitions, but it definitely seems like they're trying to accelerate growth towards a certain kind of plan.
Yeah, I mean they do regularly make acquisitions. You know, one of the things that's interesting about this company is that. And there's good parts and bad parts, is that it's 60% owned by the CEO, Ken Tuchman. And so he really, you know, this isn't a CEO who's thinking in the short term. He basically owns the company and he runs it that way. On the downside, for groups like us that are trying to take significant positions, it can be frustrating because it's not as liquid as you might expect given the size of the business. It's over $4 billion market cap, but it's relatively thinly traded, so to take decent sized positions can be frustrating. But you know, they've done a nice job of making complementary acquisitions, tuck ins over time, to bring on either partners in terms of providing different services, or partners in terms of basically buying customers. But they've generally have kept to creative acquisitions that have worked out pretty well.
That is a spectacular amount of personal wealth to be concentrated. Let me phrase that. That is a spectacular amount of personal wealth to be concentrated in a singular company for a singular individual. I mean, I guess it speaks to he wants to keep his bets where he knows he can watch the bets.
Absolutely. You know, if you talk to him, we've spent a lot of time with him reviewing his plans and talking about the business with him. And, you know, he's as excited a CEO as you'll talk to. Really, he's giddy and he's very excited about the massive ability, the total addressable market that lays in front of him. As he put it on the last conference call, there's more opportunities in healthcare alone than they could ever staff up to meet. So there's just a massive space, green space in front of these guys that they think they have just massive opportunities.
Who do they compete with?
A lot of smaller players, but they're really the largest pure play business in the space.
It's interesting. I years ago, I looked at a company called Right Now that didn't look like much to me. It was a software company that seemed to they suggested that this is what the business they were in. I couldn't figure out if they were a body shop doing customer service or actually a software to manage that. And they got acquired at a massive sum by Oracle, and the CEO went on to be the governor of a state. You know, it was a big opportunity for a lot of people and a lot of companies. And it made me realize that, you know, that this sort of the increasingly companies sort of farm out modules of their business, customer service being a big piece of that.
Yeah, it's just it's very difficult. Again, you know, we saw the sort of the two main growth areas over the past year were companies that had real staffing issues, and then these explosive kind of unicorn, really Silicon Valley type businesses that are growing so quickly. You know, Uber, you know, or like I said, Peloton, or Venmo, Airbnb, Netflix, these companies with this just this massive growth that can't really keep up. So it's a way for them to quickly and efficiently sort of solve that problem.
And do we see an acceleration of the growth here that we saw in so many ways? We saw so many companies take the gradual, even rapid trend of digital technology change, digital adoption, whatever you want to call it, pulled massively forward during COVID. Did these guys see the benefit of that with customers signing up with them because they couldn't handle their customer relationship woes?
They did. I mean, not the, you know, for them, a lot of that growth is going to come in the future. So they signed a lot of new business that they think they're going to be able to hang on to, not just kind of the one-time COVID issue. But again, they split their business into two main segments, digital and engage. And engage is really the legacy call center business. That's nearly $2 billion of revenues per year. Whereas the digital is about $300 million of revenues per year, but much smaller. So the top line is growing well. You're seeing kind of 20% type growth on the top line. What's really interesting about this is the margin story. And if, you know, looking at where Wall Street has their margins growing relatively modestly and steadily, when we really look over the last couple of quarters, it's picking up faster than that. And you're seeing as digital grows, the EBITDA margins are close to 20% on the digital side. So I think what we're going to see is really the profitability is really going to swell in the next couple of years. So I think that's really the more dramatic growth story.
So is digital really kind of like a machine learning empowered?
Exactly.
So you don't actually have to have a person on the other side. You can get enough good answers using that AI in that, you know, people throw around the words machine learning and AI as if they are interchangeable, but they do overlap. And you could imagine if you can program out about 1,000 questions, you can answer most of your customers' questions.
You can answer most, and obviously not all. And so you do need to keep that somewhat of a human presence there, so they can roll those up as the questions escalate, or as the customer is not satisfied with the answers he's getting. But you're able to farm out a lot of the answers. You know that. You know, again, you were talking about Comcast. You know, how many times do they need to remind me to just reset my modem? And it solves 80% of the problems.
Right.
And rather than having a person earning a full salary sit there and say it all day. So, it's really when you get the two things working together properly, the digital and then the human element is where you really see the most successful results.
I guess therefore the number you're watching the most when they report earnings is what percentage of revenues are digital. Do they give backlog information or get you a sense of how many customers? Because it also seems like signing up a customer and getting that customer actually fully engaged and therefore spending might be a lag of many months, many quarters, maybe even years.
And it is a lag. And it's also, in a service like business like this, you don't see the massive, you know, it's not like they're shipping a product. So you don't see a huge bump in revenues. But they do talk about backlog, and they talk about what they refer to as the number of logos or new customers that they're signing on, and that we're seeing a real significant ramp there. And you know, that's great to sign them up. How long are they going to keep them? They seem confident they're going to keep a lot of these guys. And what we have seen is that their top 20 customers have over a 10-year tenure on the product, so or on the platform. So people, customers that sign up tend to stay, even though I'm sure the intention up front is, hey, let's just hire these guys and then we'll steal all their good ideas or we'll eventually build out our own platform. But what you actually see is the customers stay on a lot longer.
Yeah, and I would think that, again, that the post-COVID, they're going to know right now, real quick, who's staying and who's going. So the next couple of quarters, you look for that, you know, especially if they now, you know, if you can see a logo disappear, you might want to ask some questions.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, it's a nice way, you know, at Villaring Company, we don't typically buy these massive growth companies, the Pelotons, obviously, of the world, just because they trade at much higher valuations and we're generally comfortable with. We're a little bit skittish from a risk perspective there. But so for us, this is an interesting way to get exposure to whatever the high growth company is of the day, or especially on the retail, healthcare, and financial side, companies that to buy might be a little more expensive price-wise than we're interested in paying, but with Teletech you get some of that exposure and you benefit from, you know, wherever the growth is coming from. These guys are going to kind of catch it.
It looks like they've also recategorized things over the years to make it easier for investors to see that, or whomever. I guess really just investors who they targeted to, where they break out digital as a separate category. They used to have customer management services, customer growth services, customer technology services, customer strategy services. And figuring out which pieces of that are digital doesn't say the story as plainly as it is.
Yeah, and obviously investors like us are trying to figure out what multiple to put on companies like this. So they know everybody wants to see the digital growth, and so they break it out that way. So you can kind of see, okay, where are we in the legacy piece versus the high growth piece, and where are we in the kind of, as those lines kind of eventually cross. So you figure out, you know, if it's a boring old call center business, we're not necessarily going to give it the same multiples we might with, you know, this high growth, high margin digital business.
And yet, it looks like on a year-over-year basis, digital's percentage of revenues declined in 2020 versus 2019. What does that have to do with?
Yeah, that's a quirk. So they had a government contract in 2019 that they discontinued, and as well as their consulting business. So there's a little bit of noise in those numbers to try to split.
So that client went away.
Yeah, that client they cut that business. So organic revenues year over year grew 25%. So the growth is solid.
Strong within the customers, organic defined as customers they've kept
customers that they've kept
customers.
That takes out the government customer, and it also takes out the recent acquisition. So it's trying to come up with an apples to apples growth.
We like it when there's a little hair in a deal.
Yeah, well, that's where you can get the more interesting valuations for sure. The cleaner they are, the harder they are for us to get comfortable with the valuation. Unless there's a pandemic, then you get everything on sale.
Well, everything on sale. Oh my God, you look at the euro here and just about anything, it can make anyone look good. But those are the moments when you get to do some work. Right. Lamar, I really appreciate it. Lamar Valeri is the portfolio manager, and we appreciate your time bringing TTES to us. Well, we want to talk about the drill down bite, that one number that tells us a whole lot. We talked about the size of the digital business. I want to tell you how big that business is, a percentage of revenues is for this company compared to the prior year. As we discussed, when the drill down continues.
The drill down is brought to you by Era, a one-stop equity platform where you can seamlessly connect to any earnings call and surface actionable insights automatically. Era's AI-powered tools will allow you to work faster and smarter. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And we hope you like the platform on which you are listening to this drill down podcast, but have you subscribed? Have you clicked the follow button to get every single episode? Have you left a review so everyone else can find out what you think of the drill down? Boy, we'd really appreciate it. Help us spread the word.
And let us know what companies you think we should be drilling down on. Talk to us on Twitter and Instagram by following @drilldownpod and connect with us directly at our website, bizpod.net.
All right, we're back with the drill down. You heard Lamar Valeri talking to us about TTES, what an interesting company this is in the business
TTEC.
TTEC, excuse me. the customer service business. I need some live chat as well. I guess I've got live chat. I've got you.
I'm your live
chat
bot. Correcting
me constantly. Thank goodness. Well, I want to give you that bite, that one number that means a whole lot. And the change in this business, in that digital business, was confusing to people, I think, when they came out. They went from 19% down to, and here's that bite, from 19% in 2019 down to 16% in 2020. Wow. That's a 19% decline, if you want to look at it that way. But when you look at those, that kind of one-time customer information, it makes a little more sense. And clearly, that's the most profitable part of the business, is the part you want to watch and see how it grows. All right, you've been listening to The Drill Down. We appreciate your time. Isaac Webster is our executive producer. The Drill Down is a product of the Business Podcast Network.